This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run with me, Melissa Idris, Julian Ng and Ibrahim Sani. 7:45 right now. In 20 minutes, we've got The Breakfast Grill. Morten Lundell, the CEO of Maxis Berhad, will be on the grill. And boy, it's a good time to get the telcos on because what used to be the big three incumbents, and Maxis being a dominant player in that field, we're now seeing lots more competition. So you've got U-Mobile as the newest and smallest player, and now an entrant, perhaps a new entrant to the market.
Weebi under Telecom. I guess Maxis has been through a very tough year. They had to go through that online viral saga at the start of the year, and which I guess is more reflective of the cutthroat, very bloody competitive situation in the industry. And at the end of the day, we consumers benefit. But you know, Maxis lost a million customers, not only out of that incident, but throughout the year, there had been a mass exodus of 1 million people out of Maxis. And we're going to put this to Morten Lundell and see what his views are. I'm sure he has some pretty strong defenses.
Okay, there you go. Morten Lundell, the CEO of Maxis since 2013, will be on The Breakfast Grill. That's just after the 8 o'clock news. But taking a look at the other business stories of the day, Proton making headlines. Why? Because the Ministry of Finance, Inc. will inject 1.25 billion ringgit into Proton Holdings. And they're going to do this by subscribing to new redeemable convertible cumulative preference shares in Proton. So should the government choose to fully convert these shares, that would mean it would make Proton, it would become Proton's controlling shareholder again.
Yeah, so I think this is on the back of a 1.5 billion ringgit soft loan that was given by Miti. And as you can see, Proton is definitely shoveling, or the government is actually shoveling cash down Proton's way.
Sorry, this is the soft loan. So remember, a couple of months ago, Miti said they were going to provide. So this is the soft loan that Miti was alluding to. So I think a couple of months ago, when Dr. Mahathir stepped down as chairman of Proton, Miti said that they would give a conditional soft loan to Proton. I think these are the details that we're hearing about now.
Okay, so are we comfortable in, you know, Proton probably having the ability to become a minority under the government again? I don't know about that. Whether the government should have a controlling stake in a failing company, I'm not too sure about that either. And I think, at the end of the day, is this a story about saving Proton as a company or trying to actually save that jobs? You know, we have 20, 30,000 jobs in Proton.
But we don't know if the government is going to fully convert their shares, right? They're only subscribing to these new shares now, essentially funding 1.25 billion to Proton.
Well, one way or another, it's still a support from the government. And should private entities have some, whether it's a loan support or a shareholding support from the government, I think that is the very sticky question, because this is really about privatizing profits and socializing costs, right? And we have a long tradition of bailouts in the Malaysian corporate sector. This kind of thing shouldn't continue, because this is our money. And the question that should be asked is there a difference from the government saving corporations rather than saving the people, right? If you want to give money to the corporations, is it, for example, a better idea to give money to the people?
Okay, so the parent company of Proton is DRB Highcom. Last month, they announced net losses of 992 million ringgit for the 2016 financial year, and mainly that was due to the poor performance of Proton. And they said that if Proton's results were excluded, then their performance would have been commendable. So yeah, again, that's It's a drain on DRB Highcom. What will the government, is this a bailout for that?
So yep, we saw Malaysia Airlines having clear cost-cutting measures. In fact, Julia, when you spoke to Christoph Muller, the concept of cost-cutting became the paramount notion of Malaysia Airlines. Now, we do have a new CEO at Proton since April this year, Ahmad Fuad, but I don't see any concrete cost-cutting measures being in place.
What is the deterrent to the government of being very loose with their money spending, right? The fact that Malaysia Airlines is cost cutting, I think that's okay, but that is after the big question of whether the Malaysian government should go into all this kind of very risky business. Should the government be in the business of business? It's the perennial question that we are asking, right? So for the government to put all these zombie government companies on some kind of a life support, I think is wrong. Even if we want to remotely consider this policy, I think you're right, Ibrahim, in asking that question, that should the government invest in a bad company or a good company? And Proton clearly is a bad company. Right?
Do you remember when Miti Minister made that announcement that there was going to be a conditional soft loan? He said it's under certain conditions, right? Do you remember what those conditions were?
One condition that was glaring, and I remember clearly, was the fact that Proton needs to find a strategic partner for a possible tie-up. And I think until now, Ahmad Fuad and the gang have not come out to say that they are, at the very least, looking for that strategic partner for that potential buyout or potential merger. And I think things like this do put ourselves at an unease position. We're nervous about this.
Well, I just looked it up. Some of the other terms were that the fact that it needs to expand its domestic and international markets, which is something significant, right? You've seen sales in Proton's not doing very well.
Yeah, in fact, on the local market share, for every 4 cars that you get for out of 10 cars, it will be a Produa. For every 1 car on the road, it will be a Proton. Now, this is a very stark kind of comparison, because when you look at Proton's comparables, this includes Honda and Toyota's. So where is Proton? If you pull back about 20 years ago, for every 9 cars on the road out of 10 cars is Proton. This is the kind of loss of market share that Proton is actually failing. So if they can't actually retain market share domestically, what chances do they have in the international market?
Can we also, I think the thing that we're not discussing here is the fact that Proton has 12,000 workers under the group. It's got 50,000 employed under various vendor companies that without this 1.25 billion, will likely lose their jobs.
Okay, so that is the stated intention to, as it were, save 12,000 workers and the extra 50,000 workers involved in the vendor program. So my question is, should the government give money directly to these people? In fact, if you narrow it down to 12,000 workers, really, if you want to save these 12,000 or you want to expand that to an extra 50,000 under vendor programs, you're talking about 62,000 people. Can this money be better spent supporting these families, not at one go, maybe perhaps over the long term, instead of really having this money lost in that web of a corporate labyrinth, right? Mm. I don't think that is an efficient way of trying to save people. And I think that if you extrapolate that to the rest of the economy, that is how our money should be spent, to be invested in social programs that will ensure the long-term innovation and survival of the economy, rather than the long-term survival of inefficient zombie-like companies.
Well, we've got a Twitter poll running about this, asking whether you agree with the Ministry of Finance Inc. Injecting 1.25 billion in Proton, or where you think that money should go. If you're on Twitter, do the poll. We've got 92 votes so far. 55% say give it to the rakyat. 33% don't give any money at all.
Yeah, and very little, wants to give it to the Proton staff and also give it to Proton company itself. As you can see, the sentiment is not there.
Now, I know the overwhelming results of the poll so far, but I want to make a case to consider giving money to the staff, right? And I'm not just saying giving money to the staff directly, but set up a program to ensure their long-term well-being. I call it a pension, if you like, so that you don't have the excuse of saying, we need to save the staff and therefore we need to give money to Proton directly. There are alternatives, right? And if you have a billion and a quarter or a billion and a half to spend, then think of creative ways of losing the money. So to those who haven't voted, I'm putting that out to you right now. This is 3%, just the smallest percentage of votes.
Julian, they're making his case for that option in the polls. 7:54 right now. Maybank yesterday, they made some changes to their C-suite. They switched the roles of their CFO, their head of Islamic business, and also their head of global banking.
So a little bit of background. This was announced by Maybank's Group President CEO, Dato' Farid Alias, yesterday. Maybank's CFO is now the Islamic head, including Maybank Islamic CEO. The group global banking head, or their investment banking head, is now the CFO. And their Islamic banking head is now the group banking head. Now, this reshuffling, we spoke about this, you know, 3-4 months ago. And this is in tandem with Maybank's way of doing things in equipping their C-suite with a whole array of skill sets. And for that change to happen in June, it comes to show that the deliberation process actually took quite some time to rationalize.
I guess they also have to respond to market conditions as well. We see loan growth falling very sharply from last year. And the question is also whether this year we would see the rise of non-performing loans or bad loans. And the banks would need to think of creative ways to grow sales. But and this is coming on the background of very high household debt to GDP of almost 90%. I mean, that is pretty scary.
You know, when you talked about the rotating shifts within the C-suite in Maybank, and that's perhaps something that they do, maybe to give their leaders a more well-rounded view of the company. But does that in any way change the direction of the bank? You know, when you have so many different heads, it could mean different directions, right?
Absolutely. And I think that Maybank will change directions, at least for their global banking business and their Islamic banking business, because the two named personalities, Dato' Amirul Faisal, he was the current Maybank global banking head. He's now in the supporting role as a CFO. And Dato' Rafiq Merican, he was previously the CFO. He's now given the Islamic banking portfolio. And the Islamic banking portfolio is an extremely crucial portfolio for Maybank in terms of their commercial banking business as well as their global banking business. And Dato' Rafiq doesn't seem to have that kind of bullishness as Dato' Muzaffar has. And Dato' Muzaffar has grown Maybank Islamic into the largest Islamic bank in the country by virtue of assets. And will this bullishness be carried forward in Dato' Muzaffar's new role in the global banking business?
Okay, 7:57 right now. Quickly, we can take a look at Tune Protect Group, which is still looking to acquire an insurance company in Indonesia. Indonesia actually is a huge group, a huge market for the group. It represents the third largest contributor to its travel business. Previously, Tune had had mutually terminated two acquisitions in the Republic due to regulatory issues.
I think, you know, this is the disruptor in the insurance industry, and I think Tune Protect continues to be a little bit of a disruptor in getting online premiums forward. And you know, when you try to sell premiums online, you cut that middleman, and that might save some cost for the consumers.
Yes, isn't Junior Cho the outgoing CEO, and his quit for personal reasons? But I guess this is something to be cheerful about for the Tune people, growth in premiums. And we're also talking about online, right? The next big thing is also online. It's happening everywhere in our news, in China with Nestle, with the banking sector, and even with insurance. And Bank Negara, I think, has this ruling to have insurance products, all insurance products online, by a certain target. I think there is a lot of resistance from the insurance industry, not to mention the insurance agent whose rice bowl it is that is being affected. But if you go online, you can get everything for cheaper simply because you don't have to pay that 171% in commissions for insurance policies.
Yeah, so the rule that we were talking about is the FTEG, the Financial Technology Enabler Group, and this is to formulate and enhance the online ruling that was created by and is being governed by Bank Negara. And I think these kind of rulings might work in that effect.
Julian, I think your plea just now to get people to rethink their position on giving money to Proton staff has worked, because I'm taking a look at the poll. It's gone up a little bit from 3% to 5% now. So, you know, a few people have opted to vote for that. Please vote on our Twitter poll. What you think about the 1.25 billion ringgit injection into Proton from the Ministry of Finance. Well, just ahead of the opening bell at Bursa, a quick one on Aeon Fantasy, in which Aeon Co. owns a 20% stake. They will open a theme park, a new theme park in Aeon Mall, Tebrau City's new wing in Johor. So this is going to be known as Fenpeka. And the concept of this theme park is going to be based on the Finnish method where a child learns from play.
Yeah. So the first thing that comes to my mind is that whether companies have anything else better to do, but perhaps this is a good business. What are the synergies between a shopping mall and a theme park is my question.
Actually, there is a direct synergy to that. I do dump my kids at the kindergarten.
Ah, right.
Yeah, when I do my shopping.
And Aeon Fantasy apparently is a Japanese-based company that specializes in the operation of entertainment facilities within shopping centres.
So these are theme parks within a mall and not building a Disneyland outside of the mall.
Yeah,
right?
It's okay, within the mall. It. And that's why the capex is quite small relative to other theme parks.
So you let your kids go and play and then you do your shopping.
Yeah, I guess.
There you go. The Breakfast Grill is coming up after the 8 o'clock news bulletin. We've got Morten Lundahl, the CEO of Maxis Berhad, talking about the highly competitive telecommunications landscape. Find out more about how Maxis plans to keep its position as the dominant player in the field. That's coming up next, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.